in the Song of Solomon. You're teaching at this spring. So if you see on the schedule Song of Solomon, I want to let you know what it is. Tonight I only want to show you very, very briefly from just a very few passages, and I'll be skipping, just taking some highlights to show you the Christian when he begins to long for Jesus until Jesus takes him home. You'll see the path. And I'm just going to take the highlights tonight. Book of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 2. First of all, we find ourselves wanting to be in love with Jesus. And here we have, you must recognize in the Song of Solomon, a picture of Solomon, who is the king of Jerusalem, tall and handsome, and that God has given great wisdom. And he is, his kingdom is, fills the earth, as it were, the largest kingdom that Israel has ever had, reaching clear to the Euphrates River and down to the Nile in Egypt, and Syria, and all nations were afraid of Israel at this time, and there was subjection to them. And they ruled with power and might. And the temple was on Mount Zion. And he took unto him the loveliest damsel in all the land, his Shulamite, from Shunem, or Shulam, little town. And she was just a from a little obscure town of Shunem, just a poor little town. She was beautiful in his eyes, but she didn't amount to anything as far as the nation was concerned. That is very little, because she wasn't of any noble family. They didn't have much money. They came from a little obscure town. But the king chose her to be his wife, because she was so beautiful in his eyes. And he goes forth through this book and he takes all the attributes of her physical beauty that endears her to his heart. And through this, we see a type of Jesus as the greater Solomon, as the king of Jerusalem, the city of peace, the heavenly Jerusalem, who is called the wisdom of God, who's tall and above his fellows, and his kingdom rules the earth, and has all wealth. And he has chosen from this old world, from us who are not wise, not wealthy, don't amount to much in the world's eyes, but in his eyes are beautiful and amount to a lot. And through the manifold graces of God and through his working on his children, he brings us into perfection. And the perfection, physically, in a young lady, is full, beautiful curves and development and so forth, lovely hair and eyes. And so he takes the picture of a most beautiful girl outwardly that he admires, because men admire beauty in a girl, and he uses that as a type of the beauty in us through the hips and the eyes and the nose and all the different parts. And as he likens them to things, he likens that into the various aspects of our Christian life that we come to in a development. In other words, we are becoming more beautiful and maturing, being made like that. Now, when that Shulamite was about yay big, she may have been skinny, and her arms were straight, and her legs were straight, you know how it is. Little knobs called a knee, and his legs. And there wasn't much figure there. And her voice didn't, when she sang, you know, it didn't have a tenor to it, and so forth. But when she grows up and begins to develop something, for a while she gets gangly. She's growing, and she's getting gangly, but it doesn't look like much is really happening. And all of a sudden, something begins to happen inside that God has caused to happen. And without any working on her own part, she begins to develop curves and so forth that make her into a fully developed, mature woman. and with capabilities of reproducing and enlarging the family, and with a heart to fall in love and to give herself into a lover. And all of a sudden, when she was young, she didn't have that heart. She has new attitudes, and now she's something that she wasn't before. Well, the details will have to wait till the college class. But I want to just sketch very briefly, very, very briefly, what a Christian goes through in this book. This is just drawing up the top of it. So she says in verse 2, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth." She recognizes that if the kissing is going to have to be done, that he is going to have to initiate it. In fact, the kissing won't mean as much if she kisses him if she didn't get kissed back. In fact, she didn't even get a chance to. He has to come to her and decide to kiss her. She has to wait. His love is something that he is going to have to do. Have you learned it's not your option? Oh, I mean, he did say a little bit later, she takes me with her eyes, with one of her eyes. You know, she just kind of been in the bathroom, you know. But we can woo him. We can put ourselves into a place where we begin to look at him with longing eyes, and that causes him to rush to us, all right. But at your option, you don't begin loving. He has to come to love. But there's a cry, first of all, in the Christian's heart, I want to be loved. I want that intimate. I want to feel his kisses. I want what comes from the very mouth of God, his word of truth and his love and his expression to me. I need it. And then we find in verse 4, she says, draw me. Draw me. In other words, pull me right into your arms. She even feels in her state, at this early state, a little bit reticent and unworthy. So he's the king. And to just run up and give him a hug, there's a cry from her heart. She's standing there and her heart is saying, draw me. Just pull me into your arms. I'm afraid to come up and just hug you. I mean, you've got to hug me. You've got to draw me. We're crying out, Lord, draw me. She can't just grab him and draw him. I mean, she realizes he's the king. The option is going to be his. The option is going to be his. And then in verse 5, she has to admit, I am black, but calmly. She knows that she's beautiful in shape. I mean, she's aware of the fact that she has some beauty. And the bride of Christ becomes aware of the fact. Not in herself, because it wasn't through her own wisdom that she became so beautiful. This hasn't been done in the cosmetic shop. God has endowed her with that beauty. Something inside of her, that mysterious life and something we call the gene system, something inside that God has put there, had all the possibilities of putting all those curves in the right places. Instead of ending up with angles and straight and all this, she ended up with curves. Because God put something within her that was programming everything to be just in a full development like it should be. And someday, if you'd have patience and keep eating at the Father's table and keep exercising and be out in the sunshine and the air and in the rain, living as needed, and believe someday those genes with that mysterious thing inside would start working and developing her and bringing her to the place where she longed to be. Sometimes as my wife walks by with her lovely hair and everything, and we go places, I notice little girls, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, their eyes, they're watching her. And then a group of them. And their hair is stringy, and, you know, and their arms are like, you know, like this, you know. And I can see that they're looking ahead, and they're longing for development. And And that's the way it is. Now, she has to admit that she's black, and in those days, they didn't have the tan fad. And in her day, they didn't have the black is beautiful idea either. In her days, the princes and those queens, they lived in a hot land. Everybody had a tan. I mean, that wasn't anything special to have a tan. The workers all, they were tan leathery, you know. They had lots of tan. That was anything to look forward to. There wasn't very many that didn't have to work out in the field, that could go around the marble palaces and keep the skin white. So the whiteness of the skin was really looked upon as, because the queens and all those that came out in the lovely gowns, they were white. They were in kings. They didn't have to be out in the harvest, out in the fields, you see. But she had to go out in the fields. And she said, verse 6, look not upon me because I am black. She was comely, but she was black. She'd been under the heat of the day. And so we find that we're out under the heat of the day. And her mother's children were angry with her. The other churches were angry. And then in chapter 2, well, I want to read a little more in verse 7. Then, in wanting to find him, she hated that he had to have him even look upon her, because she had to admit that she was black, and she didn't have that. She wasn't white outwardly. She didn't have that purity she really wanted. She says, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. Tell me where you feed, she's saying. Now, he's a shepherd. Where do you feed? Where do you make your flock rest at noon? I would like to join you. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flock of thy companion? There's a lot of others that I don't want to be satisfied with anything less than you. Why should I be satisfied? I can find other people with flocks. There's a lot of other places with flocks. But I want to be the sheep of your pasture. Your sheep hears your voice. I want you to be my shepherd. I'm not going to be satisfied with turning aside with a hireling out here with a flock of sheep and some goats out here. I want to find out where you're feeding your sheep so I can join you. And then in chapter 2, things get better for her because she's longing. And in verse 4, she says, he brought me to the banqueting house. Now, all of a sudden, her longing for him, and she found out where he was, and she begins to be endeared to his heart, and now he has chosen her, and he's brought her into the house of wine, as it is in Hebrew, the banqueting house, the wine of the Spirit, where they're going to have all the luscious things to eat. And there she is in the banqueting house. And she's sitting next to the king. And she notices a big banner in the honor of her that he has put there for the occasion, and the banner over her was love. It wasn't works. It was love. It wasn't duty. It wasn't judgment. It wasn't justice. It was love. And then in verse 6, now all of a sudden she's beginning to get what she wants. His left hand is under my head. He's holding up my head with his hand. Before I couldn't even hold my own head up. But he's holding up my head. And he's doing it in a loving way because he's loving me when he's doing it. And his right hand doth embrace me. His right hand was loving her, holding her close to him, not wanting to her to get away, wanting her close. And then in verse 8, now he leaves for a little while though, and notice the exclamation mark after the sentence. The voice of my beloved. The voice of my beloved. She was kind of slumbering and sleeping like the 10 virgins. And all of a sudden she heard a voice. And my sheep know, hear my voice, and they know my voice, and they follow me. She hears the voice. She says, she comes out of kind of a sleepiness. And she says, the voice of my beloved. All of a sudden, the trump of God. All of a sudden, it comes, the time that he's going to come to meet her and get her. Behold, he cometh, leaping upon the mountain. There are mountains in the way between him and me. And I couldn't see him for the mountains. I waited until I could get a sleepy. But I heard his voice, and he is full of delight. He is skipping in the mountains. Why, it's nothing. He's on the top of the mountain. He's bouncing along like a roll. The mountains don't slow him down. The big things that were in the way just are not stopping him at all coming to me. He's skipping on the hills. There's delight in his heart. She's ready for him. He wants her. My beloved is like a roe or a young hawk. He's strong and he's bouncing along. He's just like this. Easy. He's not having to trudge up the mountain. Behold, he stands behind our wall. Now he's close. She didn't say he stands behind his wall. We are the ones who made the wall. And he's standing behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows. He's looking in the windows of our soul. He's watching us there. She has stood herself now. And he's looking in. And he sees what his heart wants. She's beautiful. And she senses that he's looking at her. His eyes are upon her. She senses that he wants her. Showing himself through the lattice. Now a lattice, you know what a lattice is? You can kind of see him, but you can't see him very well. You know he's there, but you can't see the details yet. You haven't been brought right to his presence, but you're excited. You know he's right there. And then he speaks. My beloved spake, and he said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Come away with me. And she knows his palace is better than what she's been living. Rise up. Rise up. Awake, thou that sleepest. Now I'll give you life. My love, I love you. My fair one, you become fair. You didn't used to be when you were a child, but you've grown up and you're beautiful. And come away with me. For lo, the winter is past. That cold, bleak season with no fruit. And all your trees were just wood. Stalked against this white sky. But the winter's past. The coldness is gone. The rain is over and gone. The rain that's necessary to bring the harvest has brought the harvest. And now that the harvest is over, and the work of the harvest, and I've been working in the harvest season, I couldn't come to you because of the harvest. But the harvest is over. And after a harvest, there's always that marvelous time of banqueting, rejoicing. Come away with me. The flowers appear on the earth. There's a sweet fragrance now that Jesus has done his work. God's done his work on the earth. There's that wonderful fragrance in his people. The time of the singing of birds has come. Actually, Hebrew didn't say of birds. The time of singing has come. And in the natural, it's birds. But in the spiritual, it's the dove, the cooing of the dove. That's what he says. It's his people singing. He calls her a dove. And the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. It begins to coo. That's the time of romance. You begin to hear the cooing. You know, in the springtime, something happens. You come awake and you begin to feel romantic. That's what happened to me. I got trapped by spring. I'm glad ever since. The fig tree put us forth to a green fig. Israel as a nation is putting forth green figs. They're green now. They're green. The fruit will be ripe in the millennium for them. They will say like Jeremiah, the summer has come, and a hot summer in that country. You see, the autumn rain, autumn was the time when they plant the seed. That's when Jesus planted the seed. And then the rains came in autumn. That's the early rain. That's Pentecost. And right after, the early church. And then the winter hit. And you know how the winter gets colder and colder and colder, and less cold and less cold and less cold? Well, that's they went into the Dark Ages. And then the Reformation, they started coming out. And then the spring began to come. The Reformation revival time, and then the Pentecost. And then he would send the former rain and the latter rain in the first month. And so we begin to have the Pentecost revivals and so forth, that former rain in the first month, but not the latter rain yet in this first month. And this first month of the year to them was the harvest month. And it was in the spring. The last of the in the spring was the harvest. And then after that was a hot, hot summer that it must forward to. That's the tribulation. And at the end of that, the extreme hotness, the judgment. And so Israel had to say, the summer has passed, it's gone and passed, and lo, we are not saved. The nation of Israel is not saved. And they are all ready to burn up, and he comes and he rescues them. And it says in Matthew 25, when the fig tree begins to, when the tree is yet tender, because Israel only started in 1946 as a nation, when it's yet tender and begins to put forth its leaves, some signs, summer is nigh, tribulation is nigh. Now, the fig tree begins to put forth the green figs. This starts to show, and the figs come before the leaves on the fig tree. That's why Jesus cursed the fig tree when he saw the leaves, but not the figs. He said it had figs when he saw the leaves. And she's beginning to show forth now some green figs, and the vines with a tender grape give a good smell of fruit now. And the full of the wine of the Spirit. The fruit for the vintage. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. Oh, my dove. Because you're like a dove. He didn't say hawk. You're like a dove. You don't have those, you no longer have those big talons, you know, and that beak. And those beady eyes that want to pry on something and pick at it and tear it to pieces. But now you're a dove. You just want to feed on the grain. Jesus said, I am the bread of heaven. You're a dove with big soft eyes, and they look at you with eyes of love. I mean, you're a silly dove. You know, that were easy to get trapped by the enemy and easily netted. He called us silly dove because they're easily netted. You're easily falling trapped. You go right back and you coo and let, go right back to the same place you flew out of, and the enemy comes, you fly out and flap around, and then let them know where you're at. And so you can't protect yourself. You'll need me to protect you. And I've rescued you. He said, as a bird, I've rescued you out of many nets. Many times you've been caught in the fowler's net that the enemy's laid for you, and I've gone and taken you out, set you free again. Thou art in the clefts of the rock, and he is the rock, and the cleft is that spear puncher in his side because of his death. We are hid in him. In the secret place of the stairs. He now takes us up into a secret place in the high rocks where the animals can't find him. And the hawks and owls circle and they can't find him because he's hid there in the cleft and they can't get him. This is that secret pavilion, he said, to come and hide thyself in thy pavilion until the indignation be overpassed, until the tribulation. And then he says, let me see thy countenance. I want to see you. Your joy shall be full. And I shall see you again when the man-child is born, he said in John. So now I see you again, right there, face to face. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. Your face is radiating like the sun, because you have been beholding me and reflecting me as in the mirror and changed into mine image. And now your heart is all for me, and your will is swallowed up in me, and I've got you in my presence. You know how to wait for the college class for the development of the rest of us. But that's the picture. First we say, let him kiss me. Draw me. Quit your feet. And then we go in the banqueting house. And then he begins to love us. And then he calls us to come away. And we hear the call. And then we begin to see him vaguely. And then we find that the rain comes and is over. and he takes us to his presence and he hides us in a safe place and he comes face to face with us. And that day isn't too far off for his people. Praise the Lord.